Hi, I'm George.
I'm Dan.
I'm Rick.
And we are Queer Magnolias,
the podcast.
Each episode, we're going to talk about what it was like growing up gay in the South.
The trials and the tribulations.
The joy and the struggle.
And more importantly, how we became who we are today.
So join us for an all-you-can-eat buffet of cutting up.
Foolishness and carrying on.
Always served with a heaping helping of sass.
And that's a Queer Magnolias guarantee.
Welcome back, Magnolias.
Well, hello.
Hello, Rick. Hello, Dan.
Hello, George and Rick.
After last week's steamy conversation about porn, Danny has suggested a little milder of a topic for this week. So over to Dan to tell us what we're talking about.
Well, we're going to talk about the antithesis of bullying. We're going to talk about people or angels along the way that helped us out a little bit. Somebody who gave us a hand out, a hand up.
A hand what? Sort
of, well, one of those.
That was
two.
The porn episode, sorry.
Well, it is bled over until this week. I mean, that Kobe Kelly or whatever now.
Kelly yeah. Colbert.
Yeah.
It has Kobe Keller.
Okay, it has kept me steamy. Now, what I was thinking about was, you know, sometimes along the way, somebody comes along just out of the blue and does something for us, whether wittingly or unwittingly, that sort of helps propel us along, whether it's work or as children or friends or whatever. And I thought it would be fun to sort of highlight some of those.
I mean, I've definitely had some people like that in my life, for sure.
Yeah, me too.
I think so as well. I think that here's something that I was thinking about recently, mainly because of something I saw recently, is how like gay culture has changed so much, and certainly from when we were young, and how being gay in its own way back then was kind of a commodity, because you would meet other gays and it was like, oh, well, you're gay and I'm gay, so let's
be gay together.
Well, not so much yes that, but also like there's that kinship, there's that familiarity,
the kindred,
there's that
spirit.
Yeah, the kin- yeah. So I've definitely run into people along my lifetime, especially in college, where they were like, I see you. Let me help you get a leg up.
I had. So when Danny first brought this up, the very first person I thought about, I went back to high school. I wasn't even out at this time.
Girl, but you were a cheerleader.
A wannabe cheerleader.
I was not an out cheerleader. Let's just say that. But again, certain choices I've made, to be a part of their cheerleading squad and all of that. Those decisions obviously made me kind of a target in high school. And I remember this one guy in particular who was straight. Or at least as straight as I mean, he just was always straight to me.
Allegedly. Allegedly.
Well, he was pretty, I mean, I've seen him hook up with a lot of girls. You know, he was kind of the player guy. But that said, that, not saying one way or the other, he was always in my corner and very, not necessarily supportive of him, like, be gay, it's okay. But he was like, I'm not going to let anybody fuck with you. And anytime people would start talking shit, he would step up every single time. It's like, what do you want? What do you have a problem? He was always in their face. And he was known as sort of, the other part of that too, is he's known as sort of this like local kind of tough guy, who actually was also known, I think there was many rumors around, him being a druggie, although I never saw him do drugs. I mean, he smoked pot, but everybody in North Carolina smoked pot. So
that's the gospel.
Let me guess. He had like a jean jacket and longish hair. So suddenly he was the drug dealer of the school.
Exactly. Yep. And he wore the cowboy boots, the black cowboy boots.
And the Lee jeans.
Button fly, honey.
Right.
Or 501. Yeah.
Had the pocket, the skull in his back pocket, the whole thing, right? He fit the epitome of that, but he was just always he was the first person I thought of, because he was always the one that just sort of stood up and said, you're not gonna fuck with him, you know. But we never had a conversation where he was like, I don't care if you're gay or not, I've got your back. It was never that. I just always knew he was gonna be there, and he always was through high school. So he was the first person I thought of, but there, like I said, there's been many along the way, obviously, but he was the very first one in my memory that came to mind.
So for me, when you said this, Dan, when you brought this up, I thought of this girl from high school. Of course, she's a woman now, this black woman, her name was Shantae White. I'm sure she's married at this point. Her last name probably isn't White anymore. She was a godsend. She was this big, beautiful Black girl at the time. Very sophisticated, but very, like, put together and smart and put up with nobody's shit ever. And I remember there was one day in homeroom, there was some other girl. So it was me and there was this girl between us, and then there was Shantae. And I don't remember the girl between us. She said something to me and I answered her. And then I heard her turn around to say to Shantae and be like, oh my God, George is wearing makeup. What, I mean, obviously, bitch, we're viewing all season. Yeah. Every day. Maybe if you came to school more often. Right. Exactly. And Shantae was like, and I heard her say this so loud, so fucking what? Mind your business. And I was like, yes, queen.
Oh, I like her. We have to find her.
I know. I know. She was one of my absolute favorites.
Oh, you know, so, and I was about to say, which would have sort of set me up, was I was going to say, we have to find her on Facebook. But here's something that when I was little, one of my neighbors, I'm going to call her Susie. I'm going to call her Suzanne, which is what her name is. She there's a whole long story here. But anyway, she was, I don't know, 5, 6, 7 years older than I was. And I always remember that she was always very loving and kind and protective. And I think I saw her a couple of times in 30 years, seriously, in going back to North Carolina to visit my parents before they passed away. And at some point, we became Facebook friends. And this woman that was so loving and so kind and so accepting of the little boy who was sensitive was a good Christian girl growing up. And I use air quotes for that. And she's become a horrible Christian. I'm going to try to monitor the words I say. She's been a horrible Christian bigot. That's the word I can use right there. That won't be offensive. In today's world, she's anti-trans and she's anti-this and she's anti-that. And I thought, wow, what happened? You were so loving and kind and supportive and protective when I was little, and people do change. And we also get those who were perhaps not so good to us when we were small, who've grown into something a lot better. So you're
very right about that, because I have had people, and I think I've talked about this before, but I have had people that I went to high school who were horrible to me. Mm-hmm. And then once Facebook and MySpace or whatever came along, they would reach out and be like, I'm so sorry. I was so awful to you in high school and I apologize.
I have those people too that have come to me that some people that listen to this show and people still come to me and talk to me about how some of the shit that they said. And sometimes I'm like, you know, you realize you never actually said that to me. You said it about me, but you never said it to me. Yeah. And they're like, okay.
That's a nice place to come from, Rick, because like, if you're saying like, you know, you were never technically out and like, it was just some rumor, but some of us, it didn't matter if we were technically out. Like we walked through the hallways and it was obvious.
Right. I guess what I'm saying is, some of the things that have come back to me from people that I went to school with and the things that they have apologized for, I'm like, well, you're apologizing for something I never knew you did. I appreciate it, but maybe you didn't need to tell me, because I probably would have been, I was better off not knowing. You know what I mean? So yeah, there's a point where I'm like, I don't need your apology. Let's just move forward from where we are.
And there's a point where I'm like, I don't want your apology, because right now it's kind of meaningless.
Right. What are you doing now? What have you done for me lately?
Well, and also, are you just apologizing because we're now having a face-to-face or a internet conversation? Or are you apologizing because you're making a difference for other gay kids in the world now?
I'm going to delete this, but I'm going to fucking say it. Are you apologizing because I have 2 Emmys? I mean, that's when I got a lot of these fucking goddamn apologies. Really? And I was like, on the second one, and I was like, oh, fuck off.
They're like, hey, but I have a screenplay that I'd like you to look at.
we never got that far in the conversation.
I will say that there's a girlfriend of mine that I worked with. Her name is Josie. And at a very difficult time at work, years and years ago, she was my assistant and she was amazing. She is a wonderful human being. But on a really, really, really dark day at work, when everything seemed to be going wrong and we were being stormed at the gates by the troopers, literally, she came to me and she said, I have your back. She said, I'm going to make a pot of coffee. We're going to put out some snacks and we're going to entertain the IRS agents for the company. And nothing's going to go wrong because I've got you. This is a woman who worked for me. We had not done anything wrong. The company wasn't compliant and there was a whole bunch of whatever and over here. And it ended up going away. But in that moment, I was at my wit's end with this particular job. And this woman who was loving and kind and I had such a great time with, she took it to another level. She came to me and said, whatever goes on, you and I have got this. They are nothing and nobody, but nothing you do will be wrong because I've got your back. That will never, ever cease to be something that impressed the hell out of me.
Oh, I love that.
I do too, because I have seen Frazzled Dan. I have seen Frazzled Dan after 9 hours of shooting in a garage. And girl, she ain't easy to work with.
Ain't pretty either.
9 hours? Try an hour and a half on QMP. Jesus.
Oh, everybody on the QMPs know that it doesn't take a lot to make Dan frazzled. But if something is out of my control, it's always nice to know that people have your back, as I do my QMP buddies here. We've got each other's back, and that's a very nice thing. It's a good place to be.
All right, right back at you. Both y'all, I got your backs.
Aw.
All right, and we're going to sell t-shirts, so y'all get your credit card out now. Because
now it's time for you to have our back.
Right, we're going to give you a link in a few minutes.
We will
minutes.
Literally cover your back.
But you say that, and it reminds me of someone that I worked with by the name of Jackie Anderson. I'm not sure if she listens. If you do, hi, Jackie. It's been
hi, Jackie.
Here. So well as well. But we went through the fires together in a job that we had. And she, if it weren't for this lady keeping me sane, calling me up in the middle of the night to tell me jokes, sending me voicemail messages that she accidentally sends to the entire company, and it was supposed to come to me. It was a dirty joke. And she got
we like Jackie. Yes, go
got
Jackie.
So much trouble for it. But the two of us, I think, if it weren't for her, there were some dark days that I suffered in the early days of one of my jobs, and that woman kept me sane. And she's one of those what are we calling them, allies or angels, that just kind of kept us sane and had our back. And that was her. So that was Jackie. Thanks, Jackie.
Yeah, I mean, I've certainly had coworkers like that. Like, I've been blessed to work with some really great people that became really good friends. And you never know going into a new job, like, am I going to find someone, like...
Right. How's this going to go?
I can be a lot. So, exactly.
I have nothing to say. I'm pleading the fifth.
I can be a lot. And I'm literally always exactly who I am from the get-go. Like, I mean, you can't put my light under a bushel barrel. You just can't.
Yes.
So... to find someone who's like, oh my God, I see you and I love you and I appreciate you and then we become really good friends has always been a blessing. Like, I remember my last job, which was very straight. There was this girl I worked with. Her name was Danny. She was from Boston. I mean, she still is. She's not, she hasn't passed on. She's still from Boston. Her name is still Danny. And we got along like gangbusters. Like, our sense of humor was exactly the same. Like, yeah, it was amazing. It was amazing. And I think that, like, I don't think she'd ever had like a GBF before. So, like, that was really fun for her. And just like the thing, like, she's like, I can't believe how open you are to talk about stuff. And I'm like, well, girl, yeah, I mean, but because she's reciprocally talking very openly about her life and about, and so it's really nice when that happens because it doesn't always.
You know, one of my best friends, when I was in college, I worked at Kroger. And one of my best friends happened to be my manager, shift manager, my boss, but I mean, not like the head of the store or whatever, but she and I were so close. We did all these things together. And when it was summertime, we were at the beach constantly. Every day we had off, we went to the beach and she did the schedule. So she'd schedule us both off. And I remember graduating from college and her attitude changed a little bit, not so much, but then it kept gradually getting worse. And one day I overheard the assistant store manager, who was a woman, having a conversation with her, and the assistant manager said to her, she said, "Well, Kathy, I've told you before, he's just graduated from college and he'll be taking your job." And that was the reason her attitude had changed to me.
Snap.
And yes. And I will tell you that for the next 6 to 9 months that I worked there, I changed departments often, and it was just one disaster after another because I felt so betrayed. So for years and years, I had nothing to do with coworkers. I mean, nothing. And Noelle and I worked together one time, and she said something about going somewhere. And I said to her, "Well, you know, truthfully, I don't really mingle with coworkers." And she's like, "What do you mean?" And I said, "Well, you know, I was burned." And to Noelle's credit, she looked me straight in the face and she said, "Did I burn you?" And I said,
"Oh, no." Oh.
I said, "No." And she said, "Then what's your problem with hanging out with me?" And it was a great life lesson, because I'm the kind of bitch that will pack up a perceived hurt into a bag and put a bow on that bag and scarf, and I will carry that bag around for years. If
you are Marjorie's daughter, honey.
Oh yes, to the T. And but I credit Noelle, because she just said, "You know, really, I'm not buying this shit. You're talking about somebody else, not me." And it's wonderful, because she is a dear friend of mine. She will be for life. I see her every chance I get when I'm in New York. She's back in St. Louis now. But this is a woman who really, without being unkind, she just said, "Let's look at this situation. Let's pull, what is it, the little man behind the curtain?
Yes,
let's
ma'am.
Take him out and examine it, because all this bullshit you're carrying ain't got a thing to do with me." And I'm like, "Well, look at you."
Look at you saying something real.
Right, and teaching the old dog tricks. Watch it now. Oh, and I do have to
I didn't say a word.
No, but you know what? After listening to an episode that we recorded a few weeks ago, from now on, just so everyone knows, my age will not be true anymore. I've decided that I am now 49 or 47. I'm trying to get my feet.
You decide which one it is.
I want to be, and I'll let y'all know, because there's going to be no more mentioning of Dan's age.
Well, I will tell you this, as someone who has celebrated many, many, many returns of their 28th birthday, you pick an age and you stick with it.
Yes, but
honey, I don't know what y'all are talking about. I have no idea what this conversation is about at all.
Death becomes her.
It's called Perpetual 47, honey. My friend Tanya taught me that. She's
I guess I better
Perpetual
go with
47, baby.
Forever 49.
Mm-hmm.
It's a thing.
It is a thing. So I also feel like if we're going to talk about these people that like helped us or protected us or given us a leg up, I mean, should we talk about the fact that like sometimes there's a little cost to it? There's a little expected return.
Okay, go ahead. What do you think about, George? What's on your mind?
So, when I was younger, because it always happens when you're younger and you're hungry and you're looking for an in. Yeah, and I don't know what you're doing, but yes, okay.
Thank God is not a video podcast.
Sweetheart, is that like American Sign Language? What does that mean?
Well, I thought you were going to talk about when that guy was petting your hair.
No, Nicole, that had nothing to do with being like an angel in America. That just had to be with opportunity.
Hair, honey. It was angel hair.
I've had jobs and have been given jobs based on the fact that the person who was in power to give the job was like, "Oh, I see you, when perhaps I might be interested in you as this newly minted gay." I'm like, I'm 18. I've been newly minted 3 years ago, so it's totally fine. But
in the cemetery, in the back seat, some white rain. And
I
menthol asked, cigarettes.
Exactly. Refer to episode 1 of season 1. And I was that was always very difficult. Well, of course, it's very difficult to navigate when you're young, because you feel like an obligation, because like there's the people that say to you like, "Well, you know, I helped you get this job." And then they're like, and it's like,
"Well, I'm kind of mad because that shit never happened to me." Well, I never had that moment.
And the Shanghai, Georgia story, because I'm assuming it's was really quite lovely.
You just called him out. I'm gonna have to. I'm gonna have to bleep it out.
I'm not gonna call it out. I'm not gonna call out his last name. But
I'm bleeping it out. I'll put a beep over it, George.
Don't bleep it, because you know what though. So it's important because you know if you give someone something and it has a string attached to it, you didn't give them something. You gave them an obligation. And that's not something that someone needs
to do. Well, you traded something. Yeah, you didn't get it.
Here it is. It's suddenly, it's a commodity.
Right. Yes. Yeah. And Dan is very fond of saying everything in life is a transaction, whether it's a hooker, a bottle of alcohol, dinner out, or reading a book. Everything is a transaction. But as long as I'm participating in the transaction, and so is the other person.
That's it. Yep. Everybody knows what they're getting into. That's it.
But that's when you offer someone something or give someone something, and knowing that you're going to come around for your payoff, that's setting someone up to sucker them. And I'm not fond of that.
And what's really tricky about those situations, and that wasn't the only one. I had another job in Chapel Hill, the same thing. It doesn't come immediately. So you don't know that's what it is. It comes later after you've been there and you got a few paychecks. And you're like, oh, I found my way. I'm in my job. I'm like, I'm so happy I got this. And oh, God, I'm so thankful that you hired me. And then they're like, oh, speaking of that.
And where's my kickback? You know, itsy bitsy spider. I mean, it's a spider web thing. You know, they're not doing it. And honestly, there are so many people who do things for us freely and lovingly. But there are those who want something in return. And damn them. I mean, if you say to me in advance, I will give you a job if you do X, Y, Z, at least I'm on an even footing where I can say yes or no.
At least you can make a decision yes or no.
Of course, because you're like, well, will I do X, Y, Z?
Yep.
How much do I want the job?
I had an offer of a job here in Los Angeles through an agency, and I interviewed with this company, and I got home late in the afternoon, and I got a phone call from somebody that I had worked with that I didn't really, I mean, I knew her, but I didn't know her. I knew her name, and I'd seen her face one time, and she said, oh, I understand you had a job interview this afternoon, and I was like, or this morning, I'm like, yes. And she's like, oh, this would be a great company. And she sells me up on the company. And I needed a job badly. So she's like, oh, my God, this is a great company and blah, blah, blah. So the company I'd interviewed with had called her because they knew I had worked with her, one of, you know, 500 people. And so she called me to set me up and to tell me what a great company it was. But they didn't want to hire me through the agency.
Oh.
And I will tell you that I've regretted that greatly because it turned out to be one of the worst work experiences of my life. Not the worst, but one of the worst. And so it was just crazy. And I was like, oh, my God, this is beyond ridiculous. I took the job and it lasted 4 or 5 months.
And you took it outside the agency?
I did.
Yeah.
And I'm disappointed in myself because the agency needed to be paid. But I thought at that moment, I mean, the rent was past due.
Yeah.
My bill was due.
Well, you made the best decision you could at the time.
At the time.
But with the information that you had.
But I will tell you, I would never do that again. I would actually go to friends and borrow more money because I had already borrowed plenty. So.
Bitch is looking at me, honey.
Right? I'm like, huh? It's only 14 stairs upstairs, 14 steps to go upstairs.
Uh-huh.
And even less then, to go down.
Uh-huh. Just one, honey, just one. So, Dan, I don't know that this has actually gone the way that you wanted it to. I'm not sure we're actually talking about people that positively influenced our lives.
Does anything ever go the way we plan?
I mean, it's very organic here at Queer Magnolias.
Precisely. Off the rails is kind of a standard, right?
Well, it's very on brand for us.
off the rails is very on brand, exactly.
I love it. Well, you know, I did have something I wanted to share. So when before I went to Miami in 88 to 99,
uh-huh.
I lived in Raleigh and I worked at the News and Observer and the Raleigh Times. And I had worked part-time during the mornings for the News and Observer. And the Raleigh Times was an afternoon newspaper, and there was a district sales manager position that became available. Now, most of the people, which are called carriers, that took the newspaper in the afternoons were children. You know,
yeah, paper boys.
Paper boys or paper girls. That's right. And so I wanted to try out.
Today paper we would say dolls. Paper people.
Paper people. That's right.
I still like paper dolls.
So I asked the assistant manager, Judy McPhail, if I could apply for the job. And she's like, well, okay, I think so. Let me get back to you. And so she came back and she said, well, Kurt Phipps, who was her boss and the manager of the Raleigh Times circulation, didn't think that it would be a good fit.
Oh, Kurt thought not.
Kurt thought not. So I said to Judy, well, what do you think? And she said, Danny, I adore you, and I think you would be great in this job. She's like, but, you know, the old white boys upstairs, they're not overly so, they're not so sure.
That good old boys club, honey.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. And so she said to me, I think you would be great at it. Do you really want it? And I said, well, look, if I try and I don't succeed at it, then we can revisit it. Now, it wasn't about me succeeding or failing. They thought I was queer. And they didn't want me to have it.
They thought it.
Well, I wasn't out 100% at the news.
Same as with me in school. It's like, you are, but you aren't out, so you aren't. Right.
Precisely. And the fact that one side of my head was shaved and the other side was really long didn't, you know, that wasn't the only thing.
And you were in pink dolphin shorts.
And perpetually bleached hair. But Judy said to me, you know what? I believe in you. Give me a little while. And she came back to me in a few days and she said, come with me. We're going to go meet with Kurt. So we went to meet with Kurt.
Here we go. Kurt is showing up in the story.
Right. So I knew him. I mean, we all knew each other. And so we go into his office and he starts to say something and she stops him. And she said, Kurt, give him the job. He's a good man. He'll do us a great deal. He'll do what we ask him to do. I believe in him. Give him the job. And he said, okay.
Oh, yes. All right, Judy. Job. Yeah.
And you know what? She was by my side. She trained me. She taught me. I got along well with all of the people I worked with. Kids were a little more difficult only because, you know.
The children, honey, that's why.
Yeah, well, I had a hard time selling them on.
They're a treasure.
Would you like to make $25 a month for working, you know, 8 million hours a month. But other than that, I enjoyed it. But Judy went to bat for me. And
I love that so much.
I do too.
And when I left there, Judy said to me, you were one of the most reliable people that worked here. If we need someone to help out, we could ask you to help out. And you always helped out.
But girl, here's the thing about that. And here's the thing about that fucking thing right there.
Yes.
Because we feel like we have to do more to prove ourselves because they didn't want to give us a job anyway because we're queer. So that's if you want to, you want to make it work, you got to do more than everybody else. And you always have to be perfect.
Well, I won't say I was perfect. I was pretty, but I wasn't perfect. But I did things that a lot of people didn't want to do. So I started as an assistant manager, and it meant I had to fill in all over the county. There were 15 district managers. So wherever somebody needed a filling, and that's where I went before I got my own district. But I did things in people's districts that no one would do. Most people wouldn't collect money from outstanding clients after like 5 o'clock. I'm like, and they wouldn't go on Friday. And of course, I was always helping out.
And no one's ever available until after five or on Friday.
And I would help out in the African-American section of Raleigh. And a lot of the higher ups would say, well, we don't feel comfortable for you going to collect over there when once it gets dark. And I'm like, why? And they're like, well, you know, it just shouldn't be done. And I said, y'all really are stupid.
Have y'all ever been to Cove City? I know what's up.
What I said was, on Friday nights, most people that don't live in a big mansion get Yet the party started on Friday and Saturdays. Right.
Girl just got paid, like Johnny Kemp said.
Hello. Honey, I went every Friday and Saturday night. I collected money until it was running out of my ears. And I wouldn't just go say, give me the $4. It was literally $4 for the month. I didn't just go say, give me the $4. People would say, you want to come in? Of course I do. I would go in, talk, trash and shit. I get $4, $8, $12. I came back with a pocket full of money. They were like, what did you do? And I'm like, I just had a good time.
Exactly. I treated people like people.
Exactly. I connected with fucking people that you're afraid of. Fuck off.
Yes. And this, just as they were afraid of me, they were afraid of anyone who looked different.
Girl, if they weren't in the country club, they were afraid of them.
Precisely. Precisely.
Well, so, I love that. Actually, that's probably one of my favorite stories you've ever told.
Thank you, honey. Here's to Judy McPhail.
I love Judy, honey. Judy. Yes.
My good Judy, honey. Mm.
But not to Kirk. Not to Kirk.
I'm sorry. What was that?
I mean, but wait, how do you know that sign language, girl?
We saw some more American Sign Language. Well, I'm going to need you to explain that.
So Kirk could have fit in last week's episode. And if he could get it in, he could fit it in. I might have stood next to Kurt once or twice. I'm like, Jesus, have mercy. That's an anaconda.
At what, like at the urinal?
Yeah.
Girl.
Well, my guess is he probably didn't know what to do with it too much.
Probably not. He was, so, you know.
Kurt was stupid, honey. He should have been,
He should have been better with you, honey.
Right? He could have seen a different side of the world.
A gentle guiding touch, honey.
He doesn't know what I could do for him.
I mean.
Well. Lord have mercy.
How it always comes back to that.
Oh, I'm getting a little warm over here. It's hot in here, y'all.
I declare.
Oh, I'm not for Klimt, though.
No.
No, but you know, honestly, so that has been a wonderful thing that really... I told Rick and George earlier that Della Reese's autobiography was called Angels Along the Way. And I so really have felt that in my life that I do feel like there have been a lot of angels.
I love that for the title of this. So I feel like we can make this episode that title. George, I'm voting for that.
All right. But I will say, we all know, and there isn't a person listening to our podcast that hasn't had, had a stumble, had a rock in their shoe, had thorn in their side, or had somebody who was a complete dick and an asshole. But
girl, that's everybody. You just said everything.
Well, it is. But then I find it that most everybody has had angels along the way as well. Yeah, I know. Yeah. I was an angel along the way because my bank account was never full.
See, you have received and you have given.
Paid it forward.
And I paid it forward. Thank you. Pass it on.
I do want to shout out one person who has been an absolute angel in my life, and that is Mitzi Charles. And Mitzi,
we love Mitzi.
Yes.
You guys are doing something together soon, George.
We are. We are BFF. Coming up.
But she's been she's also been one in my recent years working at studio. You know, we worked together, we met at the studio, and we bonded over Golden Girls, and we will forever be forever Golden Girls fans. But she has always been someone that, you know, when the times get tough or shit gets awful and things like that, I can just go to her and just complain my fucking head off, and she just listens and smiles and is like, it's gonna be all right, baby.
Is she the Blanche to your Sophia?
I wouldn't call her Blanche. I think she's probably a little more Sophia to my Blanche.
I got it wrong.
Dorothy, if anything.
Because Mitzi's always the one with the wise comeback, honey. And I don't know that Blanche always had that. Blanche was always on her back.
That's true. Maybe she's the Dorothy to your Sophia.
Well, could very well
Rick
be.
Rick is Dorothy.
Let's just stop it right here. We're not turning it into that episode. Beat it, you 50-year-old mattress.
Exactly.
When you get to 50, honey, we'll revisit that.
Perpetual 47, baby. Never gonna happen.
Here's a cheers and a shout out to the angels along the way.
Amen to that, sister.
Amen.
Thank y'all for being cheers a part y'all. Of our lives. And fuck all the rest of them. Fuck the Kurtz of the world.
They hate us because they ain't us.
That's true, honey. They ain't in it to win it. They're trying to steal it.
Well, that said, I think we can wrap up this Angels Along the Way episode.
Yeah, we didn't even talk about them angels.
Right? We do need to talk about it. All right. Well, thank y'all for joining us, and we will talk to you next week.
Next week.
See y'all soon.
Queer Magnolias is a weekly podcast hosted by Rick Clifton, Danny White, and George Skinner. You can find us everywhere you find your podcasts, so please take a few minutes to leave a rating or review. We definitely look forward to hearing from you. If this is your first time joining us, please subscribe to receive the next episode automatically. Thank you for following us on Twitter at Queer Magnolias and on Instagram at Queer Magnolias Podcast. Or you can email us at queermagnoliaspodcast@gmail.com.